Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Artists Helping Artists. We are the number one art show on Blog Talk Radio. This is Leslie Seda, and I am still in Maui, Hawaii, and I have Carrie Waller, my October co-host on the line, who is in Virginia. Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning. It's a little early.
How are you doing?
Than it is for me. I'm good.
You know, a week ago I was here and it was no problem, but now that I've been here a week, I'm adjusted to the time frame. It is still dark outside and it is early. But, you know, you do what you got to do, right?
Yes. The show must go on, huh?
What takes you to Virginia, my dear?
Well, this year they're having the first ever National Spouse Military Art Exhibit. And the president of NMSN asked me to curate the show along with, and so I roped Maria Bennett-Hawk. She's been a host before. She lives in the area, so I roped her into helping me. So we are putting the show on
for
the first time. Yeah, so it's been a neat experience.
Wonderful. Well, I'm very excited for you. That'll be a great experience, I'm sure. Fantastic. And then I'm going home tonight. Yay. Finally. Because I start a workshop next week. I'm teaching in South Pasadena Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then I leave for Charlotte on Friday, and I'm teaching the following week. And then I come home, and I'm teaching that week in Newport Beach. And I actually have a few spots open in that workshop if anybody wants to do something last minute. I'm teaching through the Deborah Hughes Gallery in Newport Beach the first week in November. I'm doing a four-day workshop down there. We're going to paint boats, which I'm very excited about. So it's going to be
exciting.
Fun. But today
in your new beach house, right?
That one, actually, no. The first workshop I'm doing there is the first week in December. So, but yeah, it's done, and it was a 2-month remodel, so I can't believe it. I'm very excited. Yeah, it was a labor of love. That's all I can say. But very exciting. But Carrie was a sweetheart and lined up our guest for this week. Her name is Chris Krupinski, and I'm just going to read her bio because you have to see her art. And I tell you, I think we have two of the most talented watercolor artists in the world on the show today with Carrie and Chris. I'm very, very excited. But art is a key element in Chris's life. She's been drawing and painting all of her life, but discovered watercolors in the mid-1980s and has had a passion for the medium ever since. Chris's art career has achieved a tremendous following on the national and international level as a brilliant watercolorist. Well-credentialed, her paintings continually draw rare reviews for her fine artwork, winning nearly 100 national awards and honors. She could have been on our show last week.
Yeah.
Chris is a signature member of the American Watercolor Society, the National Watercolor Society, the Rocky Mountain Watercolor Society, Allied Arts, and the American Artist Professional League, to name a few. She has been published in major watercolor publications and has been a featured artist in numerous leading national art magazines. She is consistently included in Marquee's Who's Who internationally, Who's Who in America, and Who's Who among American women. Chang Ki-chi, and I hope I pronounced that right, selected Chris as one of the master painters for the important Invitational Exhibition of Contemporary International Water Media Masters, which was in November of 2007, in China. Her watercolors are hung in several corporate collections and are cherished additions to the finest of private collections. Good morning, Chris, and welcome to the show.
Good morning.
How are you?
I am fine, and it's nice to meet Carrie. I mean, I've talked to her a lot online, but today's the first time I got to meet her face-to-face.
Yes, Carrie and Chris are actually in the same location and doing the show together, which is absolutely fantastic. I was lucky enough to meet Carrie, I think, 3 years ago. Is that right, Carrie? Was it 3 or 4 years ago?
Probably 3, I think.
Yeah, yeah. But so, Chris, I want to start out just kind of getting a little background to find out how long you've been an artist and kind of how you progressed through your art career. Because if you guys have not seen Chris's art, it's unbelievable, absolutely stunning. So I am so thrilled that you're on the show today. Thank you.
Oh, so you want to know how long I've been an artist?
Yeah, and kind of tell us how your art career kind of progressed.
All right. I've been an artist forever. I can my mom was an oil painter. So I was always, I was always around paintings and
mm-hmm.
artist material. And in fact, when I was a kid, we had no dishwasher, and my mom, my sister and I used to take turns doing the dishes every night. And one night my mother says, "Chris, it's your turn to do the dishes." I said, "Okay," and I went and got paints and painted a picture of the dirty dishes. So my mother didn't see a lot of humor in that, so I ended up having to do them anyway. But, so I'd always painted. In high school, I was a resident artist. I mean, I just lived in the art room. And then in my senior year in high school, I won the first prize in the state of Pennsylvania for the Hallmark Art Contest. And
mm-hmm.
I had paintings, even in high school, go to New York for competition. And then, to be honest with you, I was just a naive little country girl. And the guidance counselors at school said, "Well, you're an artist. You should go to school for art education." So I did, and to be honest with you, I didn't so much want to be a teacher. I just wanted to be an artist. So I never taught. I just continued. I just painted any chance I got. I would sketch or whatever, and then I got into oils for quite a while. And then when I got married and had kids, I had to stop because first of all, the kids were keeping me real busy. But secondly, because, using oils, all I could do was picture little fingerprints all over the walls and the floor and everything. And plus, I didn't think turpentine and everything, it wasn't the best thing to have around kids, too many chemicals. So, I still had this yearning to do something. I always had this need to create. So I started and at that time, my father-in-law was an artist as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing watercolors, and I didn't really know how to do them because I had never done them before. Well, he came down. I started fooling around with him, and he came down one weekend, and he looked at my paintings, and he started giving me tips on watercolors, and then he took my painting and finished it for me, which I wasn't too happy about. But to be honest with you, I learned a lot through that. And then I started painting local scenery and exploring with watercolor, and then this medium can be fun, and I need to make it what I want it to be, because at that time, all I ever knew watercolor to be was kind of wishy-washy, everything was soft color
mm-hmm.
and everything, and having painted in oils for so long, I just loved rich, 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 rich color, and so I thought, well, why don't I just paint it the way I want to paint it, and so that's when I started painting the way I paint today.
Good for you.
That was
what a great story.
So you say, I know you've done watercolor and oil both. What are some of the benefits you can see to, the different mediums? Can you talk a little bit about, the difference between the two?
Well, they're done opposite. Yeah, when you paint oils, you go from dark to light. You paint watercolor, you go from light to dark. And so it's just a different way of thinking. When you go through the process, you're obviously going about it in a different way. And then oil's more forgiving.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so what I do is whenever I paint a painting, I think as much as I paint, I think. I have to go through the process in my mind a lot before I even put paint on the paper. And also, I sort of like instant gratification with anything. I'm an impatient person a lot. And with oils, you can't be. You sometimes
mm-hmm.
have to stand back and say, okay, I've got to stop for now. I can't really go any further right now. Watercolor, man, you can just keep on going. So,
interesting.
you know, because it dries fast. You can keep it moving. And I know that whenever I painted in oils, if I kept moving, I'd end up with mud. You know, sometimes you just have to wait for it to dry a little bit before you can continue on.
Yeah, I know. I know that. Well, Chris, although you recognize the importance of attending workshops, I know you prefer to teach yourself. And I read a quote that said something like, about 20 years ago, I made a commitment to growing and evolving as an artist, and I wanted to reach a professional level. But you knew you couldn't reach that level if you only painted sporadically. So you established this amazing discipline to paint every day. So how did you do that, and how do you think it affected your career as a watercolorist?
Oh, man, it's the only way you can do it. I think workshops are good. I mean, I think you can learn something from other artists and watching what they do. But you are your own best teacher, because if you paint continually, you will grow and you will learn new things from yourself. But you know what? It isn't obvious until after time passes, and then you turn around and you look back on what and compare to where you were a couple of years ago. But I think I always knew that. But I thought, you know, if I just paint on the weekends, I'm not going to be able to grow. So I said, at the minimum, I'm going to paint every day for 2 hours, no matter what. And I made that. I made myself that promise. Christmas night, after the kids would go to bed, I was painting.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
I don't care when it was. If I traveled, my paints went with me, because I'm sort of OCD that way. I made a commitment. I had to keep it, and it does pay off. I have to be quite honest with you. I don't do that anymore. I think I put my time in, but I still paint a lot. But there are days that the 2 hours just doesn't happen. But I did it. I did it for years and years and years, and I started to understand what I did. I understood my process more. I allowed myself to experiment more with color, and I just think it gives you a better understanding. Because the other thing is I never wanted to be somebody else. I think sometimes the danger you have if you work under somebody else for an extended period of time, there's the danger that you're going to mimic them so much that you won't develop your own identity. Mm-hmm. And one of the things about committing a lot of time yourself is you do develop your own identity then.
Sure. No, I actually had an artist who took workshops, I mean, every month, and she was so confused. I mean, she had learned so many different techniques and admired so many different artists. She'd not given herself enough time, as you said, to develop as an artist. And I told her, I said, stop. Stop taking workshops and just paint, because you have to develop as an artist and you have to discover what you want to do. So.
And then you have to be true to yourself. I mean, because you can admire somebody else's work, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's who you are.
Right.
You know, I admire artists that paint really loose and free and can get a painting done in a day. I can't do that. That's not me. I can love it when I look at it, but if I do it, it's not going to fulfill me. Because that isn't why I paint. That isn't who I am. And I think it's important to remember that.
I appreciate you saying that, because I have so many people tell me, oh, later on you'll change your style and you'll be looser. You know, like it's a beginner's thing. I think, I don't know. I think it's my personality. I don't know that I'll ever switch. So I appreciate it. I'm glad to hear somebody that said they didn't switch.
Yeah, somebody told me that over 20 years ago, and I haven't loosened up yet.
Now, midway through your career, you went back to school and opened a graphic design business. How did that come about?
Well, life was rolling along really well, and then tragedy hit my family, and my husband died. And I was a stay-at-home mom, so I wasn't working, and so here I was with three young children and needing to put food on the table. And I did try fine art for a couple of years, and that became so stressful because it's hard making a living as an artist. So I just thought, you know what, I need to do something else. This isn't working quite right. And so I knew that it was important that whatever I did was in a creative field because that's who I am. I couldn't imagine not, you know, being involved with art of some form all the time. And so I had done graphic design years before, but, you know, back in the days of the dinosaurs when they used T-squares and X-Acto knives. And so, you know, now everything was computerized. So I went back to school to learn all the computer programs, brush up on everything I needed to do. And so here I am with a thriving graphic design business quite a few years later. But, you know, out of necessity,
for you.
You know, you have to do things out of necessity.
Mm-hmm. Well, now we know why you don't paint every day.
Yeah, well, you know what, I'll be honest with you.
Sense.
Now painting has become it's my therapy and my friends. Sometimes my days will be so filled with stress through dealing with deadlines and just the stress of dealing with some clients. At the end of the day, sometimes it's nice just to sit down and paint and let all of the day's stresses just flow out of my brush, you know? I forget everything.
Yeah.
And
that's wonderful to hear.
So,
well, when you see Chris's art, you'll very quickly realize that her still lifes are amazing. What process do you go through to set up your still lifes for a painting? I mean, do you use camera, photographs? Do you have a huge wall that has all of your things? I'm really curious how that kind of happens.
Oh, well, first of all, I paint from photographs because it takes me too long to paint from life. If I painted from life, then you'd see a lot more rotten fruit because it just wouldn't last. So before I set up a still life, a thought comes in my mind. I was explaining to Carrie before that, I got this idea in my head that I wanted to paint yellow on yellow. I was really excited about it, and I was excited about how can I make that work, that lemons on a yellow cloth. How can I make it work? And then I thought further and just thought, well, you know, I want this to be a complimentary painting in a limited palette. And I knew all of that ahead of time. So
mm-hmm.
then it was a matter of finding what I could use to make, you know, to make this work. And so then I had yellow cloth and lemons and grapes. And I photographed, you know, a lot of different, I guess probably 30 or 40 photographs, backlit, from all different viewpoints. And then I work with photographs, and a lot of times I'll work with a few of them because, you know, it's hard to get one that's just absolutely perfect. So, so I paint for photographs for the most part.
And I got some
but
pleasure.
But if I'm painting quilts or anything, I was going to say, but if I'm painting from quilts, I usually have the quilt on my lap, and I'll paint directly from the quilt because I usually Kodak colors aren't the colors that I want to use.
And I've gotten the pleasure of getting to see her studio today, and she showed, you know, me how she does it. She uses her iPad to photograph now because you can do such amazing things, and she's got some neat lights. So I'm going to try to take some pictures and blog about it. So if you want to read more about it, you know, I'll have that pretty soon. But can you also take us through your painting process once you have your still life and your subject ready to paint or your picture?
Okay. I will do a light sketch, just placing objects where they go. I don't do very involved sketches. I used to, but I don't anymore. Because I found that the more involved my sketch is, the more graphite that's rubbed all over the paper. You know, and so then it just becomes dirtier. So I just lightly sketch everything where it belongs. And then if I get to a part that's detailed, especially in quilts where there's can be a lot of design in one area, I will sketch out just that area, you know, to a little bit more detail so that I don't rub the graphite everywhere. But then once I start painting, I almost always use yellow as New Gamboge specifically as the first wash of color that I put down. And rarely do I leave any white on in my paintings. Usually there's even just the lightest wash of New Gamboge because it warms up the whole painting, first of all. And secondly, nothing truly is white. Nothing is.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And because sunlight or light just reflects off of everything, which gives it just a slight hue. So, and then I always start painting. I never paint all over the paper because, again, I think I'm too OCD and I'll forget what I was trying to do. So I usually hone in on one area, and I usually start at the focal point and paint it to full completion. So, for instance, if I'm painting a pear, by the time that pear is finished, I will have a pear floating on a sheet of white paper. Nothing else will be there. And then I start radiating the background out from that because the pear actually sets my lights and darks, and it sets the color. It sets the tone for the whole painting. I don't know how to paint all over and be able to do that. I need to have it start from one area. And so then I radiate out from wherever it is, and I can make little changes as I'm moving out if I want. But that's pretty much my process. And I normally use, the biggest brush I normally use is a maybe two or three on a 22 by 30 sheet of paper. So that tells you that I'm a little anal here.
I've been accused of that too, painting with eyelashes.
Yeah, exactly. Wait a minute. This zero brush is way too big for...
So, Chris, early in your career as a watercolorist, I know you entered your work in juried shows after reading your bio and knowing you've been in over 100. I know you advise other artists to do the same, even if they might be intimidated. So do you have any advice as to how an artist can succeed at this?
Yeah, enter, period.
Just
seriously,
do it, right?
Because you know what? Every one of us as artists look at our work. And I used to make the mistake, and when somebody would say to me, oh, I really like that painting, I'd say, oh, yeah, but look at this. I made a mistake here. Oh, look at this. This isn't right. And I would point out all of my flaws.
Oh, yeah.
Because we all know our art so well because we've spent so much time with it. But, you know, so many artists, I think, they underestimate themselves. And they think, oh, my art's not good enough. You know what? There are so many different jurors out there. And they all like something different, and they all see something different in work. And enter it. What do you have to lose? I'm sorry, maybe $20 entry fee. But, I mean, enter it. What do you have to lose? And especially today, you don't even have to make slides or anything. You can send them in digitals, and you can even email most of them in. But it also teaches you things. I think I remember the first show that I was rejected from. I thought, oh, that's it. I'm quitting. I'm never going to paint again. I'm not an artist. But I think you need to learn. I think you need to learn that. I think you need to learn to be able to take rejection. I think you need to be able to learn to take criticism. And I think you need to. And I think it only helps you to grow. And that's why the fear of it. I don't understand why anybody would be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not your. Trust me, your name's not going to be flashed out there in lights. Rejected. I mean, it's not. You learn from it. You think, okay, well, let's say if there's a painting you think is, okay, I think this one's decent enough. I'm going to try to enter it. And you enter and it's rejected. Well, don't stop there. Then enter the next show with a different juror.
Right.
And enter the next show. Let's say give it five times. If you find consistently that it's not made it, well, then study the shows that you entered. Look at the shows that you entered and see what did get accepted. And maybe you can learn, and then look at your own work, and then maybe you can learn something from that. I just think all of it is a learning experience, and I think as artists, we all have to get hardened a bit and be able to accept rejection.
Now, to elaborate on that, do you have any, I know you judge some shows, what are you looking for, you know, if you're trying to decide between a painting, what is it that you're looking for that sticks out?
Well, whenever I've juried a show, I will go through all of the work, and there's some that just reach out and touch you and for no special reason except that they have. You just look at it and you say, yeah, that one's in. You don't even have to think any further than that. And then once I do that, then I go through and I look for the ones that are more or less technically correct, that have done, you know that this artist knows what they're doing. I guess that's the second thing. And when I'm left with filling a couple and I have a couple of paintings that, I'm trying to decide between, then I do study them technically, and I do study them as far as maybe what the artist was trying to say or was trying to accomplish. But you know what the thing is I really think that a different day, every juror would pick a different show. Because there are times that, you know, you're in a certain mood or whatever, and something strikes you. And I'll bet you almost anybody, you know, you look at a painting one day, you say, boy, I really like that. And the next day you look at it and you say, yeah, it's still okay. You know, it just I think it depends on moods and everything. And I think a lot of jurors can be fickle, me included.
Yeah.
That is encouraging to hear. I think a lot of people want to hear, you know, from a judge's standpoint. So you have dynamic light and shadow treatments are prominent in your paintings, and by focusing much of your attention on the smallest details, the viewer is drawn into the intricacies of your work. These two elements have enabled you to create powerfully expressive still life and bold compositions. Do you have any advice as to how other artists can paint dynamic light and shadows?
Well, the reason I paint still lifes is not because I have a love affair with fruit. I paint them because...
Really?
You know, although I do like pears. But the shapes are wonderful. Still lifes offer me everything I need to create design. And that's what my end result is the design and the composition. That's what I'm trying to achieve, not to see how well I can paint fruit. So that being said, the lights and darks come into play for shapes, along with the shapes of the fruit. And so all of it has to do with my composition, all of it. You know, so it's not that I just need to make sure that the fruit's laid out correctly. All those dark shadows have to be in the right places, too, to enhance the composition. And really, I think that my paintings are more or less all about contrasts. I mean, from lights and darks are an obvious contrast. But color temperature, you know, you want cool colors and you want warm colors. And throughout, because you need those contrasts. You need contrasts as far as hard edges and soft edges. You want contrasts. Size contrasts. You know, there's nothing more boring than looking at a painting with everything the exact same size.
Sure.
You want big shapes, and then you want a lot of little stuff going on, so your eyes are traveling around looking at that. Then you need a big shape so your eyes can stop and rest. You know, because I've seen paintings before where people do very intricate paintings, and technically they're done right. But then my eyes don't have anywhere to stop, and I need to move away from the painting because it's making my mind crazy. You need contrasts to make a painting work. So it's not only lights and darks. It's just almost everything that's in a painting. So that, you know, before I even start a painting, I think all of this through. I think of the contrasts that are going to be included and what they are and how they're going to work. And
and it works.
you do it very well.
Just so you know. So how is your artwork sold? Do you sell exclusively through galleries? Do you sell online yourself or both?
Oh, no galleries anymore. I used to be in a lot of galleries, and you know, and then I used to have, well, now my graphic design business is so busy that I don't have a lot of time to, you know, to market my work. So I have a few clients that'll come back and they buy my work. I had one woman come in and she bought my painting. I was about a quarter of the way finished with it, and she bought it sight unseen with the rest of it. But I mean, I really don't market it so much anymore. It just seems like so many people out there want a part of our, you know, business. I've been contacted by art reps who can find me a wonderful show in a gallery, and by the time I'm finished paying the art rep in the gallery, I might get 10%. You know,
right.
So that's the beauty of having my graphic design business, is I'm not so compelled to have to sell.
Mm-hmm. Good for you.
Well, I don't know. I work pretty darn hard at that graphic design, and I wish I could be painting more.
Well, there's a way. It happens, no doubt.
So when we look at your paintings, you have mastered painting fabric. You have a lot of quilts, you know, throughout your paintings. And I just wanted to know if you could offer some advice to our listeners on how you do that so successfully, and maybe what your draw was to the quilts. Is there some, you know, symbolism to that? Or
well, I started with one quilt. My brother passed away quite a few years ago, and when one of my kids was born, he had given them a quilt. In fact, it's in a lot of my paintings. They're all little one-inch square pieces of fabric, all different designs. And I started painting with that one, and because it just had a lot of meaning to me. And then I just liked the quilt. I liked the fact that it was soft, and I wanted to be able to try to convey the softness of quilts. And their folds, they're not, you know, if you use regular fabric, they have sharper folds and everything. And so I started getting interested in how fabric worked as far as how to paint the folds and things. And you know what? To paint anything, you can paint anything if you make sure you look at it. You just,
yeah.
People don't look enough. You know, and the reason that I can, that I've made fabric, been able to paint fabric successfully, is I really studied it. I studied when fabric starts rolling, you know, into a fold, what happens to the shadow? How does it work? You know, really study it. And, you know, it'll, when it, in shadow, you'll have a dark, and as it comes to the crest before the light, it gets even darker. And then it hits the light. Most people don't see that because they don't give themselves time to see. You know, they say you should look at your subject 90% of the time and you're painting 10% of the time. And it's true. We, too often, we allow our mind to fill in the blanks. And there are times that I've looked at something and I'll say, you know, that's not right. I'll look at it. But I paint it anyway, even if I say it's not right. And you know what? It works every single time. So you paint what you see. Don't paint what you think should be there. And that's why I can't paint from my memory, because I will then fill in too many blanks. And I think any kind of artist, whether you're loose or tight or whatever, you need to look. You really need to look. I think plein air, if people are out there painting, you still need to look, because there's stuff there that you're not realizing.
Very true. Very true. Do you teach? Do you teach workshops, Chris?
I've started. I'm coming to a crossroads in my life here, because I want to slow down a bit on my graphic design, and I want to start focusing a little bit more on art, and I would like to start doing a few more workshops. And you know, my constraint so far has been time. You know, I need like 72 hours in a day, and I only have 24, and I even have to sleep some of those. So,
darn sleep.
Yeah, it just gets in the way, doesn't it? So, but
if our listeners wanted to find out about your workshop, so they just go to your website? Is that the best place?
Yeah, I'm like a shoemaker. My website is out of date. Actually, it's going to be up to date within a month. But I am starting to add some workshops to my list here. So yeah, whenever I get the website up to date, it'll be on there.
And tell everybody what your website is.
ChrisKrupinski.com.
So that's ChrisKrupinski.com,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Perfect. Wonderful.
All right. You have a long list of publications listed on your website where your art has been featured. How did you come about this, and do you have advice for listeners on how they should approach publications?
Actually, I was approached by every one of them. I've never approached a publication. So,
I was afraid you were going to say that. Sorry.
Well, you know what I seriously think? I seriously think that a lot of artists need to develop a signature in their paintings. And I think that one way to do that is to whatever you start getting into, become a master at it. Master your subject or the area you're painting in. You think of all of the well-known artists today. Most of them have done that. You know, they're mm-hmm. known for either their style, but more times than not, their subject. They master it. And because you will continue to learn. I've done still lives for so long, and every once in a while whenever I get this yearning to maybe go into, whenever I think about, I want to try something else or whatever, you know, like a landscape or figurative paintings, something else hits me hard to do with a still life. And so I'm not done with it. I mean, I'm not bored with them. I just keep on going because I keep on learning. And so I think that you should, that it should be explored until you truly feel I can't do any more. And there are very few mm-hmm. artists, I think, that ever get there. Chen Qiqi once made a statement that I read somewhere, and I'll never forget this, and I think it was brilliant. He said, he paints all of those goldfish, and he paints them, and he paints them, and he paints them, and he paints them, and he paints them. And he said that he's striving for perfection in his paintings. But the day he ever achieves it, he'll quit painting because there's nothing better, there's nothing more to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, think about that. That hurts your head, doesn't it?
It does. Wow.
But anyway, I think it's important to establish your own signature. It's nice to have people stand across the room, look at your painting, and know it's yours without reading the signature.
Right.
Because you've established your signature just within your painting. And I think once that happens, then you start developing sort of a notoriety. And then doing that, and then people think of you. You know, they think of you maybe a publication that's you know, looking for artists. They think of you because you've established yourself. So mm-hmm. so you have to take that path of how do you get to the point of being recognized. And it's not by painting all over the place.
True. Yeah, no, very, very true. You have to be disciplined and kind of develop within your signature style, I think.
Yeah, and just think about it. I mean, you can, you know, it's like somebody that paints everything is a jack of all trades, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
not necessarily a master at one.
Exactly, because you can't do that. You know, it'd be like an athlete playing every sport. He'll never get good at one because he's doing them all. You know, it's the same with an artist. You need to explore explore something, and that's fun.
Do you think it's the same with the mediums? I see some artists that want to try every single medium. Do you think you should stick with one and for a while? And
well, I do, because like I said earlier, when going from oils to watercolors, it's a totally different process. So if you do both, how are you going to master one? Because you can't. I just think that to master anything, you need a lot of time. You know, you need time. You need to explore it. And to explore it means you need to do painting after painting after painting. And you have to explore colors because, you know, it's not just the color, but then the properties within the paints. You need to also understand those. You need to understand, like in watercolor, you need to understand the staining colors and the grainy colors. Pigments. You need to understand all of this, and without doing a lot of painting and without spending a lot of time, you're never going to learn that.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard work. You know,
yeah.
People say, "Oh, you've got so much talent," and I'm thinking, "Oh yeah, thank you, thank you, thank you." But it's not talent; it's work. I think the talent is maybe your vision, and I also think talent. A part of talent is the interest and the passion you have in it. But it's going to go nowhere if you're not willing to put in the work. You're not just, you know, God didn't just go, bing, you've got this and you're good. No, you have to work at it. You have to really, really, really work at it. You know, that's like saying a baseball player, you know, okay, he's been born with this talent of being able to run fast and catch a ball and throw a ball, so he never has to work and they sign him on the majors. No.
Those
he has to work hard, hard, hard. Well, so artists, you know?
You know, I think a lot of artists struggle with what to paint, like their subject material. How do you select that? I mean, are you walking around your house looking for your quilts and stuff? Or is it something that you think about for a week and you're all excited? Or does it just kind of happen for the moment?
Well, I guess that would be considered artist block sometimes whenever somebody doesn't know the next thing to paint. But here is the thing about painting every day. The more you paint, the more ideas you'll have because an idea will be born on the painting you're painting. I have a new painting in mind before my last one's finished because it just grows. Because you're so immersed in it that new ideas come from what you're doing. So I don't even have time to walk around and look because I've already got them all in my head. You know, and like I said, it's not, I don't paint subjects. I paint motivations. Like I said, I'll get an idea of, I want to use a limited palette of this, or I want to do this,
right.
Or I want to try this color. I have so many things I want to do because I do it so much, things are just born of that. Does that make sense?
Of course. No,
constantly challenging yourself. So what watercolor techniques or tips do you have to share with our listeners?
Oh, my. I don't know. Have I shared a lot?
That's a big question, huh?
I'll just paint all the time. Just paint, 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 paint. That's
so true.
To be honest with you, that's it. That's my strongest tip. You know, and use good materials. Because you know what, if you paint well, and you use poor materials, your painting will be okay. If you use better materials, it'll be better. Use the best materials, it'll be really good.
Mm-hmm.
Material matters. You know, have you ever tried to paint a painting with a brush that has loose hairs and you get nothing is so frustrating or painting on a cheap piece of paper where your color just disappears. I mean, you know, so good material matters.
Can you share your favorite paper or brushes or paints?
Well, I use almost all Winsor & Newton brushes and paints, and I use Arches paper, but I use 300-pound rough because I don't like having to give my paper a bath and then tape it on a board and watch it ripple all over the place. I don't want to do that. So when I discovered 300-pound rough paper, man, can I beat that paper up! I don't take the sizing off of it because the color's more brilliant when it sits on a sizing. And secondly, I could scrape away, you know, mistakes or flaws, or if I want to scrape in some texture, I can do that, and I don't dig a hole in the paper. It's just wonderful. You can beat it up and do so much. And I like rough because it allows you to it allows you a lot of texture because you can use a lot of dry brush, and it's what I've gotten used to. But and color, I guess about 5 years ago I discovered Antwerp blue and I fell in love. It is to me the most beautiful color in the world.
Aww.
And so whenever I discover a new color, I find a way to introduce it into my paintings because, like in my shadows, I mean, I use violet for shadows, and I had a friend of mine once. She was sitting in my studio, and she's looking everywhere. I said, "What are you doing?" She says, "Where do you see purple?" I said, I don't. It just works. So then what I've done is, then when I discovered Antwerp blue, I thought, oh, I'm going to start introducing it into my shadows because then it makes the shadows move a little bit more and make them a little bit more exciting, you know. And I'm really getting off topic here, aren't I?
No, it's great.
Not at all.
Oh, that's awesome. But I have a question for you. What's a typical day like for Chris Kapinski? I'm very, very curious.
Oh yeah, it's so boring. I get up in the morning, get my coffee, go to my computer, and do graphic design all day. And then, I get to go paint. No, but I mean that's pretty much what my days are. I get up.
So you're an evening painter?
I have to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have very demanding clients from usually 9 to 5, 9 to 6. 9 to 7, depending on what day it is, and that's why I've decided that, you know, it's there's come a time in my life that I need to cut back on one and spend a little bit more time on the other.
Sure.
You know, I would love to have a big block of time again to paint. I haven't had that in a long time, but I still do my 2 to 3 hours. But
we have a lot of artists listening to the show that work full time. And are always trying to struggle and find that time to paint. So I think a lot of people can relate with what you're saying.
Well, you know what? Like I said before, painting's my therapy. It sometimes whenever I've had a stressful day, which is most days, it's a time where I can let go of that stress and I can really get rid of it. And it's good for me. So it's not just that I want to paint. Sometimes I need to paint. And it's mine. Mm-hmm. You know, when I do graphic design, it's really commissioned work if you think about it. Everything's commissioned. You know, nothing's just what I want to do. It's what my clients want. And so when I paint, it's mine. It's all mine. And it's all my time. And that's pretty special.
I like that.
Me too. What is your favorite thing to paint and why? You may have already answered this, but I...
Well, my favorite thing to paint, let me think. Fruit? Fabric? Now, you know what? I have to tell you that the exciting thing is most, you know, a lot of artists, they'll approach a still life. And what they do is they find a piece of fabric, let's say like a white sheet or just a solid fabric to put as a backdrop to a still life where they put all kinds of stuff in it. Well, see, the fun thing is if you can find a fun fabric, something that has a lot of pattern in it and a lot of stuff going on,
mm-hmm.
you can use that and then use simpler things in your foreground and still make a very exciting painting. You know, that's the thing is so many times people put a background in a painting and they don't spend much time in it. They view it as a background. You can make your background an extremely important part of your painting. It depends on, you know, I think a lot of times people have to start taking a different viewpoint and a different vision. You have to look mm-hmm. at things, you know, don't always look at something straight on with the light hitting it straight on. You know, that's what I've been exploring for the past couple of years is backlighting. Backlighting is exciting because it puts your foreground into shadow, which makes you focus on what's in the dark, and so it's a different viewpoint. Or looking straight down on something, which makes your subject matter look different. But you know what? It's more interesting because you don't see as much of it, and a lot of times it becomes more challenging, you know, because you've got to try to make it work.
Very, very true.
I think that's why I like working from a photograph. I don't know if you experience this too, but you can take so many images and so many different views that you can find one that you might not have thought of.
Well, that's exactly right. I've found myself, you know, I'm sure whenever I photograph outside, I'm sure sometimes my neighbors think I'm nuts because I've got all this fabric and fruit, you know, and maybe some glasses or whatever. And I'm laying on the ground underneath them, you know. I'm shooting up at them and getting into weirdest positions to try to take pictures. But I like to view it from every viewpoint because then when you look back at it, you say, "Whoa, that's really interesting." You know, it's. So I agree. I agree. Photos give you that. I think it would be hard to do that without them.
So, Chris, I've created some questions that I like to ask every artist who's a guest on the show, and your answers can be very short, even one-word answers if you want, but I don't know, it's kind of one of my favorite things to do. So the first question is, what is your favorite art book?
Oh, probably the Helga paintings, Andrew Wise Helga paintings.
What is your favorite paint color?
Antwerp blue.
I'm sure
that's changed over the years.
Oh, I'm sure. Of course. Do you have a favorite musician, album, or Pandora radio station that you listen to while you're painting?
Oh, I have the TV on to nonsense, whatever, in the background. I don't watch it. I just like that. I need white noise.
Mm-hmm.
When I paint, I can't paint in quiet. I need that white noise. So no, I don't listen to music because not when I paint.
Got it. But you probably don't listen to the TV much anymore. You just need it back there. I know.
It's white noise. Yeah, I just need.
Mm-hmm.
I need. Yeah. You know, just whatever.
Whose art do you wish you could add to your collection?
Andrew Wyeth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can't afford it.
We understand that. Wow. Can you share a great studio tip for our listeners?
Oh. I'm not sure what that means.
Maybe something in your
studio,
a tool that you use, the way you set things up, lighting.
An iPad. Everybody needs an iPad.
So
when I used to paint, here's what I did. I did a workshop for the Georgia Watercolor Society, and I painted from photographs then. And I have to tell you, my camera took good photographs, so I was I was happy with my photographs. But they were all 5x7, so you know, even with glasses, it was hard to see things. And then I went and I'm teaching this workshop, and everyone in my workshop is sitting there with iPads, and I thought, oh, what are they doing? They're wonderful. You know, you can blow up an area. And I thought, what century were you born in? Oh, I'm not gonna answer that. But anyway. But
no, in my studio, Chris, I actually have easels and iPad holders for all my students. So they can just pop them right in and they can have them right there. In fact, they're on my blog, on my website. They're really inexpensive from Amazon. They're awesome. Absolutely love it.
Wow. Well, you know, I have to tell you, like whenever I paint stripes or a quilt that has a very consistent pattern in it, you know, when you draw sometimes you can tend to get smaller or larger in some areas. So I'll grid the painting so that I keep everything in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an artist's app with a grid on it.
Yeah, it's called AccuView.
No, this one's called Artist Grid.
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of them.
It's just, yeah. I am just amazed. Well, see, this is all pretty new to me, so you have to forgive me here. I'm a dinosaur. But anyway, so when I found this, I think the iPad is the greatest invention for an artist ever.
Yeah, I agree.
I do, too. I told my husband, if it dies, we have to get one that day. It's not even an option.
Okay, all right, guys, you know what I did? So I drove to Atlanta to give this workshop for Georgia, and mm-hmm. So I was just so taken with this iPad that I bought one on the way back. When I drove back home, I had to stop at a Best Buy and buy one. I told you, I'm instant gratification. I had to have it.
Good for you.
It's changing artists, you know, revolutionary. It's great. So what is on your easel right now?
On my easel, a lot of paintings, but cherries and peaches on stripes.
Ooh,
that's probably going to be the title too. I'm sure that's going to be the title. Yeah, my daughter gets on my case all the time about my titles being boring.
Well,
but you know what?
You.
It is what it is. That's what it is.
Right.
You know, I think if I say, you know, when somebody reads the name. Peaches and cherries on stripes, and they look at the painting, they'll say, yep, that's what it is.
That's it. Absolutely. Well, last question, Chris. Whose art workshop would you like to take?
John Salmonen or Dean Mitchell.
Who's that? Oh, okay. Got it.
Either one of them, because John Salmonen paints, he paints real detail. But his, you know, I would like to know how he does that. And then Dean Mitchell, just because I think he's just superb.
Yeah.
I will never paint. I'm never going to be known as a landscape artist.
Mm-hmm.
But he, everything, anything that man puts a brush to is good. And it's, I don't think it's just that he does landscapes. I've seen him do portraits. His sense of design is spectacular, and that's what I would like to see, how he comes about with his design. You know, doesn't
mm-hmm.
matter whether it's landscape or not. He just I saw once a figurative painting he did, and he had these blocks of color behind the figure, and the background, it was just perfect. You know, the figure could have stood alone and been great, but the way he cut up the background, just the design was terrific. So anyway, either one of those two.
Wonderful. Well, Chris, thank you so much for being on the show today. You are a huge inspiration, and everyone has to go check out Chris's art, because I tell you, it's amazing. And Carrie, thank you for finding Chris and for bringing her on the show. I really, really appreciate it.
You are welcome.
Thank you.
Well, it's been wonderful, and I appreciate everyone tuning in. We have about 15,000 artists that listen to the show every week, which is awesome. And as always, we will be back next week with a new topic. So have a wonderful week, and I hope you all find plenty of time for painting. Take care, and thank you again.
Thank you. Bye, Leslie.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.